when you're starting a business, are you creating new real estate in someone's mind, or are you hijacking existing real estate in someone's mind?
Welcome everyone to the Mind Gravity Podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Handa. On today's episode, I'm talking to Parul Gujral. He's the founder and CEO of a decentralized finance, or better known as DeFi, platform called Snowball Money. Snowball is trying to democratize access to information in the form of investment opportunities, which is typically only available to the 1%. How great is that? We will talk about his journey as a founder and all the exciting things DeFi and Snowball have in store. So, without any further ado, let's tune in.
Parul, welcome to Mind Gravity, and thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, Rohan. Appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here.
Parul, you're the founder of Snowball Money, which is a startup within the crypto and decentralized finance space. I do think you're doing some amazing work within the blockchain and crypto vertical. But even before we delve into what Snowball Money is and what decentralized finance is, I would love to learn a bit more about you and your background.
Sure, a bit about my background. I started my career smiling and dialing in San Francisco, knocking on doors, selling multifunctional printers and software. That I decided to focus on software. And the company had a great initiative to sell software, such that I became not only the rookie of the year, but promoted to manage 5 offices and 53 reps for managed IT services, which was a new value proposition for the company. And I was the youngest person in that position by 20 years and had the number 2 market in the whole US. And I was doing quite well early on in my career, but really felt like I was cheating myself because I was in the technological capital of the world, San Francisco, and I was working for a company that was on the tail end of innovation. And if you're ever the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And I felt that too many people were asking me questions looking up when I knew next to nothing. So I joined an organization which was going through 500 startups. I was their first hire. In a factor of 3 months, I grew them about 800%. But in addition to that, I learned about growth hacking is a $2 way of saying very, very lean marketing endeavors for startups. And so that inspired me to create my own growth hacking consultancy, which was inbound only, such that I only worked with individuals and firms that were referred to me, and I had more supply than I could handle. And so I did that until I joined an early stage company called Engineer.ai. But before that, while I was doing that, I worked with virtual law firms full of, you know, these Harvard graduates that work for big 5 law firms, angel investing groups, virtual auctioning houses, et cetera. Really full gamut. And I joined a company which is now called Engineer.ai, helped take them to $60 million of revenue, which is from being completely bootstrapped, and learned a lot about product, learned a lot about product market fit. And today, in addition to being the CEO and founder of Snowball, I write as a contributing author on Forbes, as well as a few other publications. My co-author was formerly the chief digital officer of Forbes, and we're writing a series on how to make products go viral or find product market love. You just Google search my name and product market love on Forbes, and it'll come up. And I'm advising the leadership of Uganda on blockchain and the fourth industrial revolution, and participate in a lot of philanthropic endeavors. My personal life mission is to become a billionaire, as cheesy as it sounds. To be able to positively affect the lives of a billion or more people is how I denominate the new definition of billionaire.
Kudos to you, Parul, for tracing out such an exciting journey for yourself, and then eventually going on to build Snowball.Money, which is your current venture. So it's a decentralized finance platform. You know, blockchain and crypto is such a fascinating space where not many people seem to know a lot, but everyone seemed to have an opinion. How did you stumble upon cryptocurrency as well as the blockchain vertical in general?
Well, a really interesting question and statement combination. I stumbled across this industry of cryptocurrencies, blockchain, decentralized finance by being a a trader of cryptocurrencies, but I've always been fascinated by technology as well as how quickly technology is growing and how, you know, technology has become like an extension of the prefrontal cortex, where we grew up remembering our parents' and girlfriends' phone numbers. Yet today, most people probably don't remember their parents' girlfriends' phone numbers. And we're dependent on these devices as a part of like the human experience. And this is technology. But even beyond that, what really fascinates me is this story of Prometheus. Prometheus was the Greek god who stole fire from Mount Olympus, and he took that fire and gave it to humanity. And the biggest sin that any god could do was to give fire to man, because fire represents technology. And so as fire and technology advance, humans became less dependent on God. So even today, you're seeing the most religious nations are typically impoverished or third world countries. Mm-hmm. And us city dwellers question everything. Prometheus was sentenced onto a stake to be hacked away by, I believe, a vulture for perpetuity. And so technology is so important for human beings because it advances what we can do. The original question was what fascinated me about this industry. And so that's right. I've always been questioning, like, what kind of paradigm shifts are occurring or will occur? A complete shift on how everything is being done. Like, for example, today we are undergoing the unfortunate experience of COVID. Millions of people are being affected by this. Tens of thousands of people are dying. It's extremely unfortunate. And what this brings is an event where previous data all of a sudden becomes irrelevant. For example, if you're a company in the gig economy, right, the sharing economy, and you're saying, hey, where we work, you know, we are growing at 2x and we're about 4 years from being profitable. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, COVID comes and no one wants to be in shared office spaces, nor do they want to be in shared cars or shared Airbnbs or shared anything. And so how is the global economy going to recover from this? There's very strong thesis about this. However, one can only speculate. And it's the entrepreneur's job to be religious. Not religious in the sense that they're choosing a religion and following a religion, you do much respect to you, but religious in the sense that you see and believe in something which is physically intangible. Mm-hmm. And you convince everyone, starting with the innovators or, you know, your angel investors, friends and family, venture capital world, your earliest adopters, that you are going to fast forward the present to the future where this world and this ideology is real and tangible. These types of paradigm shifts are when companies, major companies are birthed, like we saw in 2008, 2009, which are, you know, the unicorn, multi-unicorn companies today. And so I've always been fascinated with technology just based off of this concept of Prometheus. And I strongly, when I came across the Bitcoin white paper, which I was very, very late in the game, but actually took action upon it, which was like late 2015, early 2016, it was like an addiction, right? It was like the dopamine receptors were just like, whoa, going off. Like the possibilities of what could happen. And so I got into this industry as a trader, doing arbitrage trading, you know, customizing bots, et cetera. And it's been, when 2017 happened with the boom, the ICO boom and the start of the ICO bust, I became very fascinated as a technologist at Engineer.ai who's building apps and making sure, you know, these products find product market fit, et cetera. I found that with my life mission to positively affect the lives of a billion people, we were undergoing the biggest financial revolution perhaps of our lifetimes. And this was a great opportunity to democratize access to this space in a safe, simple way, such that anyone who opts to play would have the opportunity to win. Mm-hmm. That was the birth of Snowball.
Well, definitely things are in a completely different state than it was, say, 4 months ago. And we'll continue to see new business models come to life. But with that being said, would love to learn a bit more about what is Snowball and what is the product all about?
Yeah, sure. It's really interesting you asked me that question because I just went through an exercise with two individuals. One individual is Ekram. He's done positioning and branding for us in the past. He's ongoing, his equity in the company. He's also done branding and positioning for Colibra, for Snapchat, Palantir, 23andMe, Phil's Coffee, Google Cloud, etc. And I just recently had a conversation with one of our investors, Sam Zaid, who's the CEO of GetAround. We've been talking about not the elevator pitch, the 2-minute pitch, the escalator pitch. So it really comes down to, when you're starting a business, are you creating new real estate in someone's mind, or are you hijacking existing real estate in someone's mind, right? So like, if you're creating new real estate in someone's mind, you're teaching them something that they've never done before. For example, think about Bitcoin. This money is something that you self-custody. It's because you don't trust anyone, institutions. It's permissionless. And versus using the US dollar, you can use your credit card. It's stored in the bank. And so are you creating new real estate, or are you hijacking existing real estate? If you're hijacking existing real estate in someone's mind, then what you're essentially stating is you're taking an activity which is known, mm-hmm. and you're upgrading it, and you're planting the seeds of what tomorrow's shade of the tree is going to be. Mm-hmm. And so if you're hijacking existing real estate in someone's mind, then the best way is creating familiarity. If you're creating new real estate, it's by focusing on teaching them a new concept. And so starting Snowball, we were hijacking existing real estate in someone's mind. We got started with thinking, how do people invest today? And that was via, well, Warren Buffett made a bet, $1 million bet, that the S&P 500 index would outperform a portfolio of hedge funds over a 10-year period of time. And it did by over 300%. And the vast majority of Americans, and he suggests that you should invest in an ETF, mm-hmm. If you are going to invest and you're not a savvy investor. And the vast majority of Americans, when they invest, are investing through their 401k, they're investing through a mutual fund, and they're effectively investing into an ETF or some sort of index, right? And what does that mean? You're investing in a portfolio which has been professionally made. Who's a professional? Someone who's licensed and regulated. Mm-hmm. It's made based on your risk appetite. And it automatically rebalances. It's tax optimized. And it pays you some sort of dividends on the stocks that you have, right? That's like the concept of real estate that exists in people's mind. And so when we started Snowball, we wanted to mirror that concept as best we could by allowing people to invest in a diversified portfolio of cryptocurrencies, such that if they wanted exposure to this asset class, they could in a click of a button through their bank account. We learned some tough lessons because we launched this product in July of last year. July to November, we took on users. We were growing 150% month over month. We had a forecast of $27 million of assets under management for 12 months in trajectory. And we were a centralized platform, right? Which means that we were working on managing our users' money via using a custodian or bank. So our bank was holding our users' crypto and our users' dollars. And if you're managing someone's money, what does that mean? That means you're regulated. Regulation isn't a bad thing, because if you're ever managing someone's money, you should be held accountable. How many ICOs, after they reach their caps of their fundraise, disappeared? So there's two ways to regulate. Number one is via a regulator, the SEC, the CFTC, FINRA, et cetera, at least in the US. Number two is smart contracts.
Okay.
So that's how we started Snowball. And our mission has always been to democratize access to information, such that if anyone wants to play, they have the opportunity to play to win. And that information is typically only available to a small percentage of folks.
So it seems like when Snowball started, it was similar to, say, a Betterment or a Wealthfront, but in the crypto space. But as time went on, you realize there is a different opportunity. And this was something we were discussing before recording this session of an area known as decentralized finance, which is picking up steam off late. Would you indulge our audience in telling us a bit more about what DeFi is or what decentralized finance is?
Yeah, sure. So to clarify, how we launched was a centralized application. And right. We have decided to become a decentralized application. So decentralized finance, in the finest definition, is essentially borderless, permissionless, and uncensored financial service ecosystem, which is based on the blockchain and smart contract technologies. What that means, well, first you need to start at the origin, right? Mm-hmm. How have we been transacting from the advent of mankind or womankind? We started with a bartering system, right? Here's my bread for your rice. And so societies decided that we can become more efficient by denominating some sort of scarce resource as of holding of value and a transfer of value. So let's fast forward and say it's gold, silver, and copper. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's scarce, it holds value, you can transfer the value. Now, this money of gold, silver, copper then turned into, let's take your gold and put it into the bank and let's create a dollar or some sort of fiat currency to represent this gold. Let's get rid of the gold standard and this paper money, this fiat currency is now backed by the government or the government's military. It's a promissory note and it's turned into Visa, check, Venmo, PayPal, etc. So money's always been evolving since its origin. But when we went from a bartering system to a money-based system, we effectively let these institutions like central banks or governments issue and regulate this money. And effectively, what we have done is we have given our trust to the banks and to the governments. And ultimately, what this has done is it gives very little say of how these corporations handle our investments, on even how governments manage the economy. We trust that the government isn't going to print more money overnight every single day and inflate our currency unless they have to, right? And in most cases, investors only receive a fraction of the returns generated from the risks that are taken from these central authorities. And this has been the advent of DeFi or decentralized finance. So what is decentralized finance? It's open to everyone. And decentralized finance is based off of not having a central authority regulate, but having essentially computers, internet, cryptography, and the blockchain give the tools to collectively build and control a financial system without the need for central authorities. And so instead of trusting bank or humans, in math, we trust.
Why do you think there is a movement towards more decentralized systems? What do you think are the risks associated with centralized systems, or more specifically, centralized finance in this case?
Well, I'll say DeFi has opportunities and it has risks. So this whole concept of what happens if my money is frozen, when you are trusting a central authority to hold your money, what can happen? What are the risks of CeFi or centralized finance? Well, the government can say we're freezing your accounts because you're a bad person, right? And so now you don't have access to your money. The markets can crash. The government can say, sorry, Rohan, you can only take out X amount of money because we don't want the economy to crash if everyone takes their money out at the same time. Right. So you don't have access to all your money. You can only exit X amount of your stock positions because we don't want the stock market to crash. Right. What can happen is hyperinflation, right? Mm. Just over this last year, Argentina, Iran, Yemen, Zimbabwe had over 100% inflation. Venezuela had 1,000,000% inflation recently. And so if you look at like, for the last 100 years, how many countries have had hyperinflation where the value of the currency goes to zero overnight?
Right.
This is this concept of decentralized finance and these decentralized tokens, which are scarce, right? So what has happened with COVID? The US government has printed trillions of dollars. The Japanese government, right? United Kingdom, EU, all of the countries around the world, not all of them, but many of these countries around the world are minting money to instill into the economy. And while that's a good thing for the short term for businesses, smaller businesses that are struggling and having to face impacts from the pandemic that we're under, what this also means for the value of the money is it's going to lose its value. It's going to depreciate. It's going to inflate. There is a huge challenge of centralized finance. Now, especially if you want to think in like places like Ukraine, which averagely approximately loses 14% of value on an annual basis, their currency. If you want to think of the Russian ruble that went from 65 rubles to a dollar to 85 when the oil war started with Saudi Arabia between Russia. Countries want to have a USD denomination as a global trusted currency that can have a value that will likely stay stable. And so how can you do that? Well, with centralized finance, not everyone can use it. Not everyone can buy stocks.
Right.
You have to go through a KYC process. You have to be qualified in a sense, right? You have to be in a certain geolocation. And DeFi solves a lot of these things.
So what do you think are the advantages of decentralized finance or DeFi? What are the opportunities associated with it?
The opportunity of DeFi is what you can effectively do is you can now have an exchange of value, you and I, regardless of where we are in the world, without a middleman giving us approval, right? Without us having to pay excruciating fees. We can exchange value where you could lend money from me through DeFi. Maybe it won't come from me, but I can contribute my money to a liquidity pool and you could lend from that liquidity pool, right? And because there's no middlemen and regulators there, it's all governed by smart contracts and mathematics. You don't have to have a credit check or credit score or go through a long process. You can put up collateral. And for me, I can make more interest on my money. Like for example, one of the protocols that we're working with, Snowball Compound Finance, we're able to give our users almost 5% interest today, whereas the average bank is offering 0.3%. Maybe a credit union is giving you 2%. Right? Marcus Goldman Sachs is giving you 1.5%.
Well, the picture you painted sounds very rosy and very utopian. I'm sure there are risks associated with it as well. What do you think are those?
So what are the risks of DeFi? Well, there's many risks of DeFi. It's a brand new industry. If you're in the industry, like Rohan and myself, you may know that there was a liquidity pool that just got hacked. A smart contract got hacked such that it lost $25 million overnight.
Right?
This whole idea of trust being based off of mathematics, cryptography, and the blockchain, well, these smart contracts are made by the developers of the protocol.
Right.
And so the developers of the protocol, you have to trust, are going to do the right thing always and someone won't go rogue or they have the right security in place such that they can't get hacked because they're using private keys as well for these smart contracts. Right. The user experience is not very good for decentralized finance, which creates a huge opportunity. Today, if you want to access DeFi, you have to take your fiat and convert it to crypto. Then you need to take your crypto and send it to one of these dApps, decentralized applications. Then the dApp will convert your crypto and lend it out to allow you to generate yield or invest in these other assets. And same for cashing out. It's not as simple and as intuitive as it can be or what we're used to. And the technology is young.
So from what I hear is there's obviously risks and opportunities involved in it. The technology is new and there's obviously kinks along the way that still needs to be ironed out. But this is definitely the future of finance. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. So, I mean, looking at our unique use case, when we launched in 36 states only on an iOS device in the US. However, we had over 100,000 people on our wait list globally. Let alone just our Android users, right? And so we went the regulated route. It was very difficult. It was time consuming. The only way our users could invest is through their bank accounts through an ACH, which takes up to 5 days.
Right.
So what is Snowball doing today to mitigate those risks and create those opportunities for over a billion people across the world?
Now, what is Snowball? Today is very different than what it was before. Snowball, in the simplest terms, today is what we're hoping to be the smartest place for you to put your digital cash. Right? Mm-hmm. Today, your bank account is paying you a fraction of a percent, more than likely, or maybe 1 or 2% on interest on your cash. Mm-hmm. But what Snowball is doing is it's giving you an average of last year you would have earned 6%. And so we're giving you access to much higher interest for your cash. And on our roadmap, we're working on doing yield optimization such that we can take your money and put it in the most lucrative liquidity pools automatically. So you're getting the highest interest.
Right.
Interest is being paid and rendered in real time. And so that is really our goal, is to be the best place for you to put your digital cash to make high yield and interest. Now, what you can do with that as well is you can take from, you know, if you're in Russia and Ukraine and India, anywhere in the world, and you have access to internet, you can take a USD denominated position. We're working on trying to give people the opportunity to turn their local currency into crypto.
Right.
And if they already have been able to turn it into crypto, they can send that crypto over to us and we'll give you a USD denominated position, which is then paying you high interest. Or it can be a gold denominated position, which is paying you high interest. What we also allow you to do is invest in portfolios.
Right. So
if you want to play the market, don't have to play a guessing game. You could invest in a portfolio based on its volatility, and that'll also generate interest for you.
Gotcha.
And then finally, we're allowing our users on our roadmap to invest in these portfolios that are created of tokens that are based off of physical assets. For example, a venture capital portfolio. You know, we've partnered with a fund called Andra Capital, which invests in late stage pre-IPO tech companies like Palantir and SoFi. So you could have access to owning these late stage pre-IPO tech companies. Yeah, 30% year over year. Obviously, COVID changes everything in terms of companies, generous all companies in the tech space for the most part, their trajectory. But we're democratizing this access. If you want to invest in real estate, you can invest in tokenized real estate. We partnered with a company that has tokenized Andy Warhol art.
Would it be fair to say that in the future, with the advent of decentralized finance or DeFi, I could be sitting in any corner of the world, but be able to have fractional ownership in any of the appreciating assets that most of the first world countries and the Western society currently enjoys?
Yeah, if you can find a way to hold a crypto position, then you have access, because it's not based off of who you are, what your net worth is, etc. Now, in some cases, it still may be that way. The space is early, but the concept is based off of allowing everyone to have access as long as they have internet access. The concept of you don't have to trust a bank or central authority, because you become your own bank and you hold the own keys to your own money.
Well, while obviously this is a fascinating space, why would you think centralized authorities want to give up the power that they currently enjoy in favor of decentralized finance?
Well, I've been a builder in both spaces, but you know, my experience is just one of many experiences, and it may not be the best or right experience, so take what I say with a grain of salt, but to share my perspective, I believe that decentralized finance actually is democratization at its finest. Why? Because one, it creates hyper efficiencies. Right? Once the space matures and some of the problems that we discuss are solved, it creates hyper efficiency. No need to pay for licensing, no need to pay for all of the technology for auditing, no need to pay for lawyers to do extremely expensive work creating a thesis, which may or may not hold up because the regulatory landscape hasn't given clear guidelines. If you're able to now negate all of these excruciating expensive costs and have a system that is efficient, Well, the value that you're giving to the user logically will be potentially a quantum more than you're getting through the other system, because in the other system, it's very, very expensive to build and manage, such that you have to charge expensive fees to your users or compress the margins such that it's less lucrative for the users. And so I think that DeFi in the long term has the real opportunity to be a potential, if not a standard, an industry that is taken very seriously. Also, I'm betting that there will always be uncertainty and corruption in the world somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Perhaps not in the United States or a first world nation, but perhaps in a third world nation, right? We saw what happened to Venezuela, where there was 1,000,000% hyperinflation overnight. Imagine this. You're a millionaire, okay? You worked very hard. You made $10 million. You wake up the next day and you now have $10. And so we see like countries like Venezuela having a 20% premium on Bitcoin. And people in Venezuela may want to denominate to a USD pegged position. And so if you can give them access, you can give them access to a derivative of a stock such that they can invest in like an Apple and have fractional ownership of it. Yeah. You're making the world a better place.
Paolo, this conversation is obviously making me really excited about the future of finance within the decentralized space. But shifting gears a little bit, I would love to learn a bit more about what does it take to build a startup?
Yeah, I mean, my experience starting a business in the DeFi space, I'll say, is 5 months is how long we've actively working on taking our platform and turning it from a decentralized platform to decentralized. When you're starting a business, you have to really ask yourself, what is your purpose and intention? Starting Snowball was a very interesting experience because, you know, my purpose wasn't to be the biggest winner in the world for my own purpose, for my own, you know, pat on the back. Make sure that the strategy is one, that you're not doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for your customer. Now, oftentimes, the prerequisite is you're solving a problem that you have that other people have as well. And that's why you're the right person for the job. But you have to be willing to learn. We're undergoing an incredible paradigm shift with COVID, where all previous data is now practically irrelevant. Mm-hmm. What will the world be tomorrow? And how is it going to be different today?
Then how would you say you measure success in the startup that you're building?
I find success to be a concept of three things. You have the wind conditions, you have the hang glider, and then you have the pilot.
Right.
The pilot represents the team, the hang glider is your product, and the wind conditions is the opportunity for the market in the form of timing. And so you could have the best hang glider pilot in the world, but if there's no wind and the weather conditions aren't such that you can fly, you will go straight to the bottom.
Paolo, I think that's a brilliant analogy, and thank you for sharing this with everyone. One other question that comes to my mind when I think about an early stage startup is, what are the key ingredients of building a culture?
A founder has two main responsibilities as a CEO. According to one of my dearest friends, he's a advisor to Blockchain Capital, an investor there, Will O'Brien, who's the founder of BitGo. And he's just one of the most brilliant people that I know. He told me one time, Parul, as a CEO, you have two responsibilities. Have a vision and don't run out of money, right? And oftentimes, your technology leadership, they're very focused on what they can deliver today. And they may not have the vision. So it's important to keep everyone motivated. And that is culture. And some of the lessons that we learned at Snowball is that company culture for us is everything. We've created a family. This is a place where people are excited to show up. You know, everyone is in flow. People hang out and have drinks after work. They have personal conversations. This is the people that you're building with. This is the people that you're dreaming with. And so you have to create a culture where people feel like their work is important, that they're bought into your vision, and that they're given varial rewards throughout the process. Now, that varial reward isn't necessarily money. Right? It could be recognition. It could be code that goes into production. It could be contribution to an idea. I think what for us was most important was culture. And we've had people come in and been the most brilliant people that have walked through this organization, but they have not been a culture fit. And while they last in the organization, they were quite detrimental to the overall organization. And give the opportunity for heroes to be born who are organically willing to solve problems collectively.
I think that's brilliant. One other thing I do want to touch base on is like a lot of founders are starting up in this space, either starting a startup or starting a startup within crypto or blockchain space. Based on your experience, what advice would you give to them?
Well, I think that it's a concept of fire, right? So if you think of fire, fire will burn if you give it fuel, right? And fire will also create warmth that people will want to be around that fire for that warmth. Now, if you give fire the appropriate fuel, right, that fire can turn from a candle into a blaze. And so that fuel is the founder. The founder has to have that fuel organically. And it comes back to that concept. Like, are you doing something that you're willing to die for? And if you're not willing to die for it, is it worth doing at all? Do you have the conviction and believe, one, that you're able to bring this idea to fruition? And what's the idea? The idea is you're solving a problem that the world needs. And oftentimes companies fail because they're either solving the wrong problem or they fail to solve the problem together. And if you're open to solving a problem that the world wants and not solving, you know, your ego, fulfilling its, you know, its own goals, then you'll have a really good shot at it.
Paro, this has been a fascinating conversation. And as much as I don't want to end this conversation and continue to talk to you more about both Snowball and the future of finance, our segment has come to an end. But before we go, could you tell us, our audience, where they can reach out to you?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting time because we just started a crowdfund on republic.co. So if you go to republic.co or Google search republic.co Snowball, you'll find our page. The best way to get a hold of me is going to our page, asking a question there on our page. Our campaign just started. So if you believe in what we're doing, if you have a comment or question, please leave it there. You can share your belief in the form of a investment. Minimum investment is $111. And we'd love to connect there and see how we could be resourceful for you.
This was wonderful. Thank you again for your time, Paro, and best of luck with Snowball Money.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rohan. Cheers.
So guys, thank you for tuning in today. That was some exciting and insightful conversation with Paro and a lot of stuff to think about. Let me know what you guys think and reach me out directly on my Twitter handle at Rohanda1588 or message me on LinkedIn. Have a kick-ass day and I will be back with more amazing conversations next week. Till then, namaste.